going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today.
And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
All right, Payne and Pendergast. Seth, we can take this conversation on the air we just had. I don't want to let this go by the wayside because it impacts your watching of the draft tonight.
I struggle with this every year. What's the most efficient way to watch the draft and actually enjoy it without getting distracted by a million different people who are putting information out? I just need to know two things. Which outlet or website is going to give me the video in as close to real time as possible, but also have all the data and everything? Like, who do you like and go to?
So my methodology is I like ESPN's feed better than NFL Network's feed. I'm Rich Eisen hosts that, and I'm just not huge on Rich Eisen's energy. He's fine at what he does, but I like the vibe of the ESPN desk better. I think the analysts on NFL Network are probably slightly, but anyways, I watch ESPN. So I watch that on my TV screen, and then I have my laptop where I've got sort of ESPN's draft tracker open that shows you the best available. You can go click real quick and see which teams have been doing what. You can click on players to see profiles and stuff like that.
I'm going to limit it to just that. And I'm going to stop worrying about getting things in real time.
Yeah.
Okay, you might get updated, but then you lose track of everything else. I'm just going to watch ESPN.
Yep.
I'll get the information as it comes to me.
Yep.
And there we go.
Yeah, you'll be
simplified.
Good.
Simplified.
You'll be good.
That's how Henry David Thoreau would have watched the draft.
That's how he would have. He would have sat there next to Lake Walden and just sat there and watched the draft.
Yes. Simplify, simplify, simplify.
Henry David Thoreau. One of the few authors that I can actually throw in something like Lake Walden and sound like I actually read books back in the day.
Well, anything that they made you read in high school.
They made me read Henry David Thoreau.
Like, act like you're a learned soul.
They made me read it.
Henry David Thoreau would have been an awful, awful draft analyst.
Yeah. Yes.
Too concerned with things like truth and whatnot.
So we'll get to the big storylines in just a second, but it's interesting. You know, today is the day where you bring up the Texans. And there's people that have all sorts of opinions, as you should, on what they should do. Hey, should they be in on this? And we've seen very little activity league-wide, Seth, in terms of no team has moved out of the first round. All 32 teams, for the first time in the common draft era, for now, have all 30. They each have their own first-round picks. This is the first time that all 32 teams, or all the teams in the NFL, I mean, before there were 32 teams, have gone into the day of the draft with their own picks. They haven't traded out of the first round. They haven't traded for players, all those things. So, and we haven't seen any big player moves either, any teams trading for guys. Maybe we see some tonight. Text message. Rumors have been circulating for a potential trade for Jameson Williams or Chris Olave. If you can get any one of those guys, pull the trigger, says
Bam.
A texter on the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. What is your appetite for trading for existing players with any of the Texans draft
capital? I guess it's always, this is annoying. What's the price? How much are they giving up to get them? Is it a single draft pick, or can it be as simplified for my dullard brain?
Is he
as
getting
possible?
A contract along with trading for him, too?
Yeah,
is
this
a big deal.
Right. And that's where I would get excited if they traded for either of those guys. I'd be like, all right, awesome. You paid too much, but I'm excited about it.
Yeah.
I would talk myself into it. I know me. But I think the other part of it is that, man, there's so many good wide receivers that go in the second and third rounds these days. You already have two bona fide receivers on your depth chart. There's still time to trade for those guys later.
Yeah.
I'd say keep all your draft cap, keep your powder dry until you're satisfied with the picks you have. I don't have any appetite for it pre-draft.
Yeah.
If it happens within the draft, if maybe a couple of the wide receivers that the Texans really like are off the board after they've drafted an offensive lineman in the first round, I'm open to it then. But I want to trust the economical process as much as possible, or the most economical route, which is just do a really good job drafting your wide receiver in the second or third round.
Yep. Specific to those two guys, I think Jameson, it's a red flag at all that the Lions, who are in a Super Bowl window right now, would be looking to move a guy who's been in the league 3 years. He's still got 2 years of control over him, who's a good player. That's a red flag to me. Chris Olave, I can understand them wanting to move because maybe New Orleans is feeling like they're more of in a rebuild mode. And this is why I wouldn't trade for him. He's had some major concussion issues. Chris Olave has. Major concussion issues. So that's a non-starter for me. I'm a no on both of those guys, just blindly, without knowing what the price would be. I'm a no on both of those guys.
With Jameson Williams, there's very much a, all right, what am I missing here?
Knucklehead exactly, factor, maybe.
Yeah.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Biggest storylines of the draft tonight. We're going to dig plenty into the Texans as we roll through here until 10 o'clock today on the draft. The biggest storyline is, where does Shedeur Sanders land? That's the biggest storyline of the draft at large, you know, non-Texan storyline. That's the biggest one. And this thing is going to go right up to the start of the draft, I think, Seth, in terms of speculation, anonymous scouts. We had the guy yesterday, an anonymous coach, saying that the Shedeur Sanders interview was the worst interview I've ever been a part of. He's entitled. He's not even that good at football. Like, all these things.
It just feels so much like the Steelers would be the team to take Shedeur Sanders.
Yes.
And so many aspects of it, including, look, Arthur Smith, the offensive coordinator, loves to run a lot of play action. Just kind of give the quarterback the answers to the test. And that's a little bit of what Shedeur needs, I think, is that he's got a tendency to hold on to the ball too long at times, or to sometimes try to freelance. But when he plays within the system, he's really, really accurate. And I could see Arthur Smith thinking, all right, man, I feel like if we can harness what he's good at, this is like Ryan Tannehill on steroids. We can really perhaps get the very best out of Shedeur Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you look at Mike Tomlin, taking in a player who's only ever played for his dad. From high school through two different colleges, Shedeur Sanders has played for his dad. And I wouldn't call Mike Tomlin a father figure type, but I think he, in a lot of ways, he coaches the way Deion coaches.
Yep.
He's way more old school in a lot of ways than other NFL or college coaches are. That Shedeur might really respond to that. It might feel a little bit like, oh yeah, this is how my dad was. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And then supposedly the Steelers are not letting the draft affect their Aaron Rodgers plans at all. But I think if Shedeur goes to the Steelers, do they still try to get Aaron Rodgers as a 1 year mentor to Shedeur, or do they just make a They just say, all right, either Shedeur is ready to go or we go with Mason Rudolph?
I'd make a clean break. I'd make a clean break. If you draft Shedeur, and I would even look at starting Shedeur as a rookie and seeing where it goes. If he shows you enough throughout the offseason and in camp that you feel comfortable putting him out there, then put him out there. You can't. How long are you going to wait around for Aaron Rodgers, man? And how does Aaron Rodgers feel about coming into a building where you just used the first round pick on a guy? What's the cost of Aaron Rodgers? You could tell me that Aaron Rodgers gets a 1 year $35 million deal, and you could tell me he gets a 1 year $10 million deal, and I'd believe both of them right now. I have no idea what that is. So I think you move forward with certainty with Shedeur Sanders, and you just go, you know?
Remember that little tidbit that came out? Oh, it was before the Titans ended up drafting I think it was Skowronek. Was the prospect that said when he was meeting with Arthur Smith, when Arthur Smith was the head coach of the Falcons, that Arthur Smith at one point just said, "You're boring me. What are you doing?" Like, what? Like, basically very dismissive of him.
Yeah.
And I try to figure out, okay, if it's that version of Arthur Smith, who doesn't have the best interpersonal skills in the world, it doesn't seem. Doesn't strike you as that guy.
No.
Like, how does he fit? How does he judge Shedeur Sanders if they have one of those meetings? And I, That's the big question mark there is, I think that Tomlin and Shedeur Sanders would be a good fit. I wonder about Arthur Smith and Shedeur Sanders and exactly how all that plays out.
I wonder about Arthur Smith and Aaron Rodgers, too. Like, Aaron Rodgers, that's been the one whoopee he's had the whole time, is his little Nathaniel Hackett alongside him at these stops, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah. So that's, yeah. But
I think Arthur Smith looks at Shedeur Sanders' accuracy and his football IQ and thinks, man, all right, I can use that.
Yeah.
If we don't have a top-tier QB talent available in the draft, and this is who, yes, I can do something with this.
Look, they traded for DK Metcalf, so, and they've got George Pickens. Yeah. I don't know what they're doing in Pittsburgh right now. It's very strange. They traded for a top tier wide receiver, and they've got no solution at quarterback right now. You know,
I think you've got two guys, and George Pickens, however, in any given week, he's either top tier or he's a basket case, whatever he is.
Yep.
Like, if you've got an accurate quarterback that's playing within the scheme, you can get the ball to those two guys. It just makes too much sense. Yeah. I would bet Shedeur Sanders versus the field for the Steelers.
Okay.
But that also includes Shedeur Sanders falling to 21. That's the tricky part.
What's the better chance, that he falls to 21 or that if he gets to 21, the Steelers end up taking him? Because now there's all these people yesterday, Seth, saying he might not even get drafted in the first round, Shedeur Sanders.
I'm pulling my checker back. I'm taking the field.
I love the draft.
But if they do draft a quarterback, I see Shedeur Sanders to the Steelers.
I think so, too. So that's number one. That's the biggest storyline tonight. Where does Shedeur land? Number two, and this kind of popped up yesterday, any potential surprises in the top three? Reportedly, the Giants and the Browns are listening to phone calls for their picks at 2 and 3. Cleveland's at 2. The Giants are at 3. Any potential surprises in the top three? There's a report that perhaps the magnificent Gladstone is looking at really getting aggressive here,
trading up,
trying to move up from 5 to 2.
Man,
with the Cleveland Browns. Hang on, you got to hear from Ian Rappaport here, real quick. Yeah, here's Ian Rappaport carrying water for the magnificent G.
My understanding is the Jaguars will not be timid. They are going to be bold. They are going to do in a way what James Gladstone's mentor, I guess you would say, Les Snead did, which is be bold. Could the Jaguars try to move up from 5 to, I don't know, let's say 2? I know the Cleveland Browns have received some calls. Maybe they try, at least from now till the beginning of the draft, to make that leap. Maybe that's for Travis Hunter. It would be bold. Will the Browns do it? We don't know. Keep an eye on the Jaguars. They will absolutely not be, you know the Homer Simpson meme where he kind of shrinks into the back?
Sure, the bushes.
That's not going to be them.
Okay. That is clearly the magnificent G calling up Ian Rappaport and saying, we're going to be very aggressive with our modes of operation.
What is on the posters in Jacksonville? What is the magnificent Gladstone's favorite term? Intangibly rich.
Yes.
And there's a lot to Travis Hunter where it's in a different way, but there's a lot to Travis Hunter which feels like Will Anderson, which is top 5 caliber pick, but also intangibly rich.
Yeah.
I mean, is Shohei Ohtani intangibly rich? I would say so. There's something.
Yes.
It's not just physical ability that gets you to be able to play the way Travis Hunter did in college. Mm-hmm. There's some extra stuff to that dude. Yeah. And man, I could see the Jaguars getting, and honestly, I wouldn't fault him for it. In the same way the Texans felt that strongly about Will Anderson, Travis Hunter is a more impressive, if you just look at him as a prospect, Travis Hunter has more impressive physical tools and traits than even Will Anderson did, but he also has those intangibles. I don't think that's an out of the realm possibility. The question is, I have a vision of the Browns, even though they don't, but I have a vision of the Browns almost as an organization where they should be thinking, listen, guys, we're just going to screw this up anyway. We're going to botch it anyway. Let's just trade back and take the bounty and at least get more swings at the plate.
More swings,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, we won't screw it up. I feel like if Travis Hunter goes to the Browns, they're gonna ruin Travis Hunter.
If I had to guess, I don't have the Jimmy Johnson chart in front of me or anything like that, I would guess the cost to move up from 12 to 3 is pretty similar to what it is to move from 5 to 2. Like you're talking about, five... Like, the closer you get to the top, the more expensive each slot gets. Who says no? If you're the magnificent Gladstone and you say, look, Andrew Berry, the GM of Cleveland.
Yeah.
We want to move up from 5 to 2. So I'll give you 5, and I'm going to give you our first rounder next year and our second rounder this year to move up those 3 spots to get Travis Hunter. Now, the Browns are probably going to wind up then with Mason Graham, or maybe they get Ashton Jeanty or something like that. They don't wind up with Travis Hunter, who might be a generational two-way guy. But boy, you're still picking 5th. You're not picking 12th. You're picking 5th, and you just picked up 2 premium picks in the process.
So what was it, a first and a second?
First next year and a second this year to move up 3 spots. Arizona got for Will Anderson.
It's basically how it calculated out for Will Anderson.
Yeah.
Because there were a bunch of exchanges there.
Yeah.
I think that...
Would you say the old rule is
that in the top 5, it becomes like everything breaks down, like the rules of the time and space break down.
Right.
And the
you don't really go
by the Jimmy Johnson. Yeah. Usually that's for a quarterback.
Yeah, it's right.
But this is also just like Shohei Ohtani. Yeah. I think he's just a completely different type
of unique.
I would not fault the Jaguars for doing that.
Yeah.
I honestly can't. As much as I would love to hate on them for that, there's almost no price for moving up if that's what they want to do. You want to talk about making a bold move and just changing the culture entirely. Yeah, I think that's fair if you really want Travis Hunter.
That would be a holy bleep moment, the degree of which the Texans did 2 years ago with Will Anderson. Will Anderson was a holy bleep draft moment, especially considering the Texans had just taken a quarterback 5 minutes before that trade was consummated. What a wild night.
There's another part of the Browns front office that has got to, at least in their subconscious, be thinking, man, these fans are all amped up for Travis Hunter.
Yeah.
Like, there's something. Yeah. Not that they should make their decision based on that, but it'll be a beautiful train wreck of a fan response if the Browns trade out.
I think the next story, so we got the storylines for the draft tonight. Where does Shedeur land? Potential surprises in the top 3. Does the magnificent Gladstone make a big move up with Cleveland? That was rumored yesterday. The fight for Ashton Jeanty. Ashton Jeanty has all of a sudden, Seth, become the hottest, I would say, non-quarterback, non-Travis Hunter player in this draft.
Yeah.
To where the thought process coming into draft season was that he'd go to the Raiders at 6. Doesn't look like that's happening. Jacksonville has been rumored at 5 heavily this week. And that's the betting favorite for Jacksonville is Ashton Jeanty. And there's talk of Chicago, Ryan Poles, who has extra draft capital still, I think, from the Bryce Young trade, moving up, if I'm not mistaken, maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. But there's talk of Poles and the Bears moving up from 10 in front of Jacksonville at 4. Like if New England, the talk with New England at 4 is if Hunter's gone and Abdul Carter are gone, then we're probably in the market for an offensive lineman. We may as well move back because Will Campbell, Armon Membu, and Kelvin Banks are all the same guy anyways.
And that
Poles could be a good trade partner because they want Jeanty, and that would take the Bears up in front of the other teams that want Jeanty.
Right now, the Jaguars, as you said, are one of the favorites to land Jeanty. Mm-hmm. Daniel Jeremiah said, from him talking to people around the league, that the Jaguars are either going to take Jeanty or the Tet McMillan, the wide receiver out of Arizona.
Okay, offense.
Yeah. And I wonder if you're the Jaguars. All right, you've already got a very promising and productive young stud first-round wide receiver. That go ahead and, even though, man, I know the league is littered with teams that took running backs in the top 5, and it turned out later they're like, ah, crap. Oh, we got this guy as our quarterback. We got that guy as our quarterback.
Yeah.
I think it would make sense for the Jaguars. Damn it. This draft is just lining up too perfectly for the Jaguars, and it's angering me.
You think? Look, like you just said, drafting running backs in the top 5 hasn't always been a recipe for success.
We're
basically saying the Jags might do something that other teams have been unsuccessful executing that strategy.
Then it comes down to really, okay, does Liam Cohen actually know what he's doing?
Great point. I don't think
people quite trust. They did some promising things as a coordinator in Tampa, but hey, you're kind of a doofus-looking dude.
Yep.
You talk like a doofus. You look like a doofus. And are you actually are you a bona fide head coach? I'm not so sure or convinced of it.
That's right. So that's the third big storyline. The last couple storylines that I'll be keeping an eye on tonight is the other quarterbacks, the non-Shedeur, non-Cam Ward quarterbacks in this draft. Like, it's people are all over the place on Jackson Dart and Jalen Milroe, and this Tyler Shuck has kind of snuck his way into the conversation as well because this quarterback class skews way more towards the Kenny Pickett class than the one last year with 6 good quarterbacks in the top 12, yeah. It turns out. So that'll be something to see. And I think that's important for the Texans because if there's teams that are looking to get back into the first round, the Texans are sitting there at 25. And if they're still sitting there at 25 and they don't trade up, they could be a trade candidate.
Okay, so in Daniel Jeremiah's mock draft, and remember he accurately predicted the Will Anderson trade and pick for the Texans a couple years ago.
Yep.
Where it would get really interesting is the Giants in his mock draft, they take Abdul Carter with their number three pick, but then they trade up to number 18 to draft Jackson Dart.
Wow.
So that's the kind of dynamic where maybe if there's a team out there with a guy like Jackson Dart and the Texans are sitting there at 25 still, what do they give up and how much? I mean, there's a chance. You know, the Texans and the Rams have a very good relationship, and there might be a chance that you just see a one. That might work out really well. You could see the Rams maybe moving up one spot, telling the Texans, listen, we're taking a quarterback. This is why we're doing it. And then the Texans still get an offensive lineman that they like.
Yeah, that's true. And there is, you know, with Kaylee in the building now, there is that communique probably with Sean McVay and everybody in the building with the Rams and whatnot, you know?
That's where I would feel the most good. I'd feel the best about the maneuvering of Nick Caserio, which is, you can't judge these things immediately, but as far as how I would feel, okay, we still got a first-round pick. You traded back, but it made total and perfect sense, and you still got the guy that you would have drafted at 25.
Yeah. You pick up an extra fourth or something like that.
Yeah.
You don't have.
I would give a way too early A+ on that.
I would too, without knowing who they took. I would give an A+.
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's, you don't have a fourth round pick right now. You pick up a fourth, and your draft has a little bit of balance to it. Especially as somebody who is going to be covering the first 3 hours of day three of the draft, I would like for the Texans to pick up a fourth round pick. You know,
I wonder if, and I think Nick, depending on how the board falls, Nick might be having that very same mindset of, all right, we might trade up for a guy that we really like, but there's still a lot of quarterbacks on the board and we're sitting here at 25.
Yes.
Like, what's the opportunity cost? Because I might really get a bounty if I just sit here and stand pat.
Oh, yeah.
And wait for somebody to get desperate to get up above. You know, I had just said maybe the Rams will just want to swap, but other teams are thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
The Rams could very well take a quarterback. It would be the perfect time for the Rams to take a quarterback.
Yeah.
You've got Matt Stafford for however many more years, late first round. This guy doesn't have to start right away.
We have a lot of people weighing in on the text page, and I've seen, and on Twitter, I've seen this, that the Texans sticking at 25, taking whoever the best offensive lineman is available at 25. There's somebody here saying Josh Simmons, another person saying, give me Donovan Jackson. We've got another person saying Tyler Booker, but they're all saying the same thing overall, Seth, which is get your best offensive lineman at 25, then use some of that Tunsil draft capital to move up from 58 in the second round to either move back into the first round or up in the second round to get another, you know, another offensive lineman or another good player, you know, like, to move up into the 30s maybe to get a guy.
And honestly, that's where if you just try to step back and get some perspective on this situation, I know a lot of people really, really, really want a wide receiver. Man, they've addressed wide receiver. I feel good about Christian Kirk. The biggest concern is whether he just stays healthy for 17 games. They got rid of three of their starting offensive linemen. They've got a brand new offensive coordinator. They're at the draft. This is the most value-rich environment where you can go out and address what hurts you most. Mm-hmm. And, you got to take the – you don't stretch or reach for it, but as many opportunities as they have to bring good prospects and opportunities into the building at offensive line, that's what I'm thirsty for.
Do you think that when this weekend is over, that they still have all the draft capital – that they got in the Laremy Tunsil trade still in their possession?
No. Yeah, no, there's not a chance in hell. Yeah.
Okay. Just
that's
asking.
How I'm thinking about that. I hadn't been all that eager for Caserio to trade up, but then I remind myself, they did get draft picks back for Laremy Tunsil. And using those draft picks to go out and get another offensive lineman makes perfect sense.
Yep.
So my appetite for a trade up has increased a little bit.
Extra three this year, extra two, and an extra four next year is what they have. From that trade. Speaking of Caserio and speaking of the Tunsil trade, there was a really interesting article that Jonathan Alexander did in the Chronicle that dropped yesterday, sort of a profile on Nick Caserio and kind of how we've gotten here as a franchise and his role in that and the ups and the downs of the Nick Caserio era. There were a few nuggets in here, Seth, that I had not heard before. They're little things, But I was going to go through these here, and we'll get to the Tunsil trades, the big one, but just the little ones here. First of all, it took Jonathan three tries to convince Nick to do the interview. He said that in the, he said after two tries, Nick finally said, fine, but why do you want to interview me? You know,
kept pestering him.
Yeah.
Good job, John. It's one of the biggest and most important things to be a successful beat writer is just to pester the hell out of people.
I texted him last night and I said, way to be persistent, man. Good job. Yeah. Good job. The funny quote in here, it talked about how Nick took over the job in 2021, and then all hell broke loose. You know, Deshaun asked for a trade. The lawsuits start piling on Deshaun. Maybe things in the building don't look exactly like what Nick thought they would look like when he got here, you know, in terms of who's playing what role and whatnot, you know.
Yeah.
And Cal McNair had a funny quote where he said, because Jonathan talked about how, man, Nick could have quit. He could have gone any number of other places. He said, Cal McNair says, I don't know why he did stay, but he did, to his credit. did people ever think there was a chance Nick Caseri was just going to throw his hands up and leave? I know there were rumors.
100% there were rumors that he wanted to get back to New England and all
of that. I never thought that he would. I don't know.
First of all,
he's under contract, so there's that, you know.
Look, I'm not making an across-the-board comparison here or anything, but I do think that the, at least one difference between Cal McNair and Bob Kraft is that Cal McNair isn't as tight with the purse strings as Bob Kraft is.
Yeah.
And I think that's at least one thing that you look at as a GM. And then there's all the things that we wouldn't know about just how he feels about working in that organization and everything. But at least that's... You take any of the other rah-rah stuff out of it and just having an owner who's shown a commitment to like, hey, look, if you want to... I mean, it was a negative when Jack Easterby was still around and Bill O'Brien was the GM because Cal said, hey, I'm going to let my football people do their thing. And Bill O'Brien spent and traded very irresponsibly.
Yeah.
I think Caserio could look at that and say, as long as the owner is willing to do that and he's got the right guy actually calling the shots, yeah, I feel better about this situation than perhaps some of the other ones where the owners are notoriously stingy.
Yep. Other things in this article Jonathan Alexander did about Nick Caserio. Nick requests that the Texans social media team not blast out his birthday on their platforms because he doesn't want the attention.
I totally appreciate that.
Yeah.
Don't make it about me.
Right.
That was one of the more curious things about Nick in the first couple of years that I honestly didn't understand it at all, where people were insisting that Nick was egomaniacal and would never relinquish any kind of control or decision-making, that he was always going to hire head coaches who were stooges. And I understand because David Culley...
The optics of the Culley
gave
era.
...gave that very much.
Yeah.
I think the David Culley hire, for multiple reasons, and there were people in the building advising Nick at that point that would no longer be there.
Yeah.
But I think that with Culley, they knew that they were in a transition phase, and they knew they were hiring who would probably be a lame duck coach, and they wanted to try to have somebody that could kind of stabilize the ship at least. The problem was they undershot in their expectations.
Yep.
I mean, Lovie Smith would have been a much better choice to be that bridge coach.
Yeah.
That maybe it actually works out. He's not our ideal candidate, but man, he's gonna operate things like an actual NFL head coach.
Yep.
That Lovie Smith would have been a perfect choice for that first year.
Lovie for 2 years instead of Culley for one and Lovie for one. I agree. Nick's workouts get a lot of attention in this article. D'Amico Ryans, he's a machine. CJ Stroud, he works out in a quarter zip or a vest. He's a wild boy. Even Monty Austin Ford Seth says whether it's his work ethic, the way he approaches his workout regimen, his dedication to his diet, it's impressive to see, end quote. So the workout, Nick Caserio, workout warrior, gets a lot of attention in this article here. I don't think that's anything we didn't know. It was just funny for me to see quotes about it in an article about how he constructed this team that we've got right now.
When I think about Nick working out like on the treadmill or something, it's like one of those sci-fi movies where there's a some kind of a robot or a human type robot.
Yeah.
What was that movie where the guy had to fake being one of the genetically selected ones?
I don't know.
Everybody text in. They call it Jerome the Metronome.
Even Ben's confused about that one.
Gattaca. I think it was Gattaca.
Okay.
Do I have that right? Yeah, Ben, Gattaca.
Ben's sort of nodding his head. Ben is our movie expert.
Sounds about right.
Sounds
about right.
Yeah.
Or any movie about a career-driven young woman who's she's working in a male-dominated field, but she shows that she's gotta work that much harder, and they show her on the treadmill, and she's got that look in her eyes.
That's Disclosure with Demi Moore and Michael Douglas. Do you ever see that one?
Sean, that's about 27 different movies.
No, that's the one I think of.
I never saw Disclosure.
It's really good. It's very good.
Is that the one where she sexually harasses Michael Douglas?
Yes.
Okay, well, let's leave the sexual harassment part out.
Right, but there's parts where she is in there on the treadmill talking to some of the other C-level executives, you know?
In any movie about a woman who's trying to make it in a male-dominated profession, there will be a montage of her working out fiercely with intensity.
And there is. Yeah, there you go. Okay, this
is like in any movie about women that are pals or whatever. There's going to be a scene where they're dancing in the kitchen with glasses of wine.
Yeah,
weirdly.
There you go. Same thing. this is the big one here in Jonathan Alexander's article about Nick Caserio, the Tunsil trade, and CJ Stroud talking to Nick about the Tunsil trade. Before we get to the article, here was CJ Stroud in his press conference on Monday, asked, "Were you surprised by the Laremy Tunsil trade?"
I mean, that's something I feel, you know, is not my pay grade. You know, it's just a quarterback. But at the same time, you know, you build relationships with guys, and you know, you're LT, of course. Well, I know you're talking about and Shaq. You know, those are two of my best friends. So that I've come into the league with. So yeah, it hurts. You know what I mean? And you know, our front office knows that, and they know how I felt about it. And but I totally understand, and I'm not against it at all. I totally think that we're heading to the right side of things. And, you know, I think something I learned about Nick is that he has a plan. No matter what happens, he always has something up his sleeve. So, of course, sometimes we don't know what that is. But you just have that trust, and that's something that we actually talked about today, having blind trust and, you know, having earned trust. And for Nick, I mean, he's gained my trust in both areas. So, I'm excited, but, you know, I'm always going to be best friends with those guys and rooting them on. And, you know, I still talk to them daily. So,
okay. So two things. So that quote, I think that quote captures a lot of it, but two things that I thought were interesting in this article that I thought added to the overall tenor of CJ processing the Laremy Tunsil trade is that Jonathan said in the article, CJ drove to NRG Stadium and asked to chat with Caserio. So this is something that CJ Stroud himself, I read that to be, that's something CJ initiated there, right? When he says CJ drove to NRG Stadium and asked to chat with Caserio. That's interesting to me. Number two, there is a quote that he has from CJ in here that was told specifically to him, not in the press conference, which I think reiterates about 90% of what we heard there. But the quote was this: "I was confused. Laremy is one of my best friends. He's somebody who's a big brother to me, someone who was my locker room mate for 2.5 years. I guess that means they were next to each other. And somebody I got close with off the field," end quote. I think just maybe a more direct, maybe a more poignant version of the press conference answer right there.
Yeah, probably. And I know I lean on this all the time, but I 100% believe it, that when CJ Stroud in that podcast said that Laremy is a vet, he ain't doing nothing extra at practice, that's a problem. It's a problem. It's really, really a problem, especially when you're trying to establish a culture on an offense that guys' friendships and sometimes who they look up to, that can be a problem. Doesn't mean Laramie's a bad guy, but it's not necessarily the culture that you want guys who are making the most money on the team to be putting out there. And that's what would bother me so much when people would say, no, Laremy wasn't an issue. He was very popular with his teammates, and they voted him captain. You know who votes for the offensive captains? The offensive players. Right. Those guys don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Right.
They don't, what the hell are you? No, those guys are idiots. They don't do anything that you're trying to get them to do, save for a couple of offensive players. Who they choose in their popularity contest to be the captain means nothing to me. It means nothing.
When I read that quote, and I heard CJ, when I heard CJ say that cut we just played, when he said that on Monday about how close he's best friends. See, Shaq Mason, whatever, he mentioned Shaq. It's Laremy we're talking about here. And when he said, he was one of my best friends, it was like one of those things when you're a parent and you have a junior high age kid that has a friend that's the friend they get into trouble with all the time. But then you found out that that friend's dad got transferred somewhere and they're moving out of town. You're like, oh, thank Thank God my son's not going to get in trouble anymore, or at least not as much, you know?
It's like your daughter dating a senior who in high school who smokes. Your freshman, your daughter's a freshman, and she's dating a senior.
You know, she's
and he rolls up the cigarettes in his shirt sleeve and everything. You know what it is? This is the problem with Laramie Tunsil being big brother to C.J. Stroud. Those roles need to be reversed. That would be like if Eli were big brother to Peyton. that would be, it would kind of be like, Peyton would be like, I'm going to do a dadgummit. I'm going to do everything that Eli does. I'm going to mope around like a weirdo and everything. And I'm just going to, Like, reverse the roles.
If
CJ were a few years older than Laramie Tunsil, I think CJ would be a great influence on Laramie Tunsil.
Yeah.
But that's not who you want to emulate as a pro.
The final detail here is because Jonathan's follow-up question to CJ obviously was, so what did Nick say to you? Well, how did he explain the trade? And the sentence in the article, though he didn't reveal the details of Caserio's answer, Stroud said he left the conversation with a better understanding of Caserio's reasoning for the Laramie Tunsil trade. So there you go. It's a good article. Go out of your way to find it. Jonathan Alexander, nice job. Houston Chronicle. HoustonChronicle.com is where you can find it. All right, mock draft injection time. It's the day of the draft, so we got to do Daniel Jeremiah's mock draft. That's the one I think that we've gained the most trust in over the last couple of years, based almost entirely on him predicting the Will Anderson trade chapter and verse back in 2023. We'll do our final 7:45 mock draft injection pre-night one of the draft. That's coming up next. Seth, is it fair to say that Daniel Jeremiah's mock draft has evolved into the one that, at least here in Houston, it's the one we trust the most, based almost entirely on the prediction of the Will Anderson trade 2 years ago?
Well, the thing about the mock drafts are that I try not to get too hung up on whether guys nail the selections or not. I just want the reasons for why they're making their selections, how plugged in are they? And Daniel Jeremiah, you know for a fact, just has lots of conversations with lots of front offices. And I think a lot of people, he's at that spot where I think a lot of teams actually like Daniel Jeremiah's input. And that if he writes it or says it, maybe sometimes they want to have conversations with him about it. So, yeah, I like his mock drafts, not because I expect him to nail every pick, but because some of the little tidbits are the reasons that he does it. It comes from a very informed place.
I agree. All right, so with that in mind, let's get to the Texans pick here. And he does not have the Texans. Daniel Jeremiah, as we know, will put trades into his mock draft. Again, he did it with Will Anderson 2 years ago and nailed that one. He does not have the Texans moving out of 25. So with the 25th overall pick in the Daniel Jeremiah NFL.com mock draft, the Houston Texans select Tyler Booker, guard, Alabama, and he says this: the Texans are intent on changing the culture of their offensive line room, and Booker, how about this, Seth? And Booker's intangibles are as highly regarded as any I've come across in my time scouting offensive linemen. Do you think there's as good a chance that they trade up for Tyler Booker as it is they would trade up for Kelvin Banks?
Okay, that's an interesting one, because I think Tyler Booker is regarded by a lot of people, mostly because he tested poorly at the combine, as a guy that might not go in the first round at all. So I think that's one that there'll be two schools. One, a lot of people will be excited just because everything that Daniel Jeremiah just said about Tyler Booker, he's produced at a very high level at Alabama for a long time. People will be excited that the Texans did what they wanted to do to go get that guy. I think the hardcore draft Knicks will be disgusted with Nick for trading up so heavily for a guy that he could have gotten at 25.
Yeah.
I know how this works. That is immediately what everybody says with certainty, invalid certainty, like, oh no, you could have gotten this guy later.
Yeah.
You never know that. You never know what anybody else's draft board looks like.
Okay, this is my gut. You tell me if I'm being crazy on this one here. I feel like there is a chance he trades up for Tyler Booker, but maybe his threshold or his stomach for doing so is a lower amount of slots than it would be for Kelvin Banks. Like, hey, I'm willing to trade up. I'm willing to, and maybe it's positional because Banks can play tackle for you and guard's not a premium position. I don't know. Or Banks is just more highly regarded and you have to move up higher to get him. But if I put the over under at slots, Nick would move up to go get Kelvin Banks. I'd put it at 10.5, right?
Right. And
Booker, I'd put it at like 4.5, something like that.
In this mock draft, Kelvin Banks is gone by pick 6.
Yes.
The Raiders take him. And this, again, Jeremiah's logic here, and who knows about his conversations with various people, is that Kelvin Banks played with Steve Sarkisian. Steve Sarkisian was with Pete Carroll, so has a relationship there. There's probably a really good relationship. So, and the Raiders obviously could use an offensive tackle.
Yeah.
Banks for me is, it seems like people are pretty convinced he's going to go in the top 15.
Yes.
Which makes it, and I know that there's these reports that Caserio would trade up into the top 15. I'm not 100% convinced of either of those things right now.
I agree. As far as Daniel Jeremiah's draft goes, and by the way, the other players on the board when the Texans pick at 25, we always get people asking that. Like, who else was there? Good question. The next five picks were Omarion Hampton, running back North Carolina. I'm going to tell you right now, if Omarion Hampton is on the board at 25, there will be a small part of me that'd be like, that'd be kind of fun. You know, a top shelf running back at 25. I don't think Texan fans would be wild about it. Kenneth Grant, your guy. Goes to Baltimore.
Baltimore, man. And that's my old rule. It's like, if a guy I like goes to Baltimore and he falls to Baltimore, dude, I get really PO'd.
And he turns into the next Justin Matabike, playing next to Justin Matabike, you know?
Yeah.
Donovan Jackson goes 28th to the Lions, so he's on the board there. Jahdae Barron, the cornerback out of Texas. Trey Amos, the cornerback out of Ole Miss. Josh Connerly goes 31st to the Chiefs. And then Jihad Campbell closes things out with the Eagles at 32. So there's in the next six picks after the Texans pick, Seth, there's at least three, maybe four guys that are super intriguing for the Texans there.
I think the other thing, too, is I know that we had one of our listeners this morning, and we've gotten this a lot, is a lot of people really want Josh Simmons. Hey, if Josh Simmons is there at 25, I'm very, very skeptical of Josh Simmons. Maybe he ends up being an all-pro offensive tackle, but he's coming off a torn patellar tendon, and there have been concerns voiced about his maturity. Mm. And it's not something I'm in the appetite for right now. In this draft, I don't think, Simmons doesn't go in the first round in Daniel Jones.
He doesn't, there you go. I mean,
that's where, the character concerns, or maturity, I should say, maturity concerns. That's always take those with a huge grain of salt. And yet, I feel like more times than not, when there are anonymous reports of maturity concerns, there are reasons that there are maturity concerns.
Well,
when the player ends up playing well, it's because he actually addresses it.
Yeah.
He'll come out and talk about it 3 years later, like, he had some growing up to do.
If you had to guess, do you think Josh Simmons, if he were to slip like that, do you think it has more to do with the injury, the patellar tendon injury, than the maturity stuff?
I don't know if it's impossible. I think it's a combined package.
Combined.
It's that you've got two. It's one thing that, I can deal with one. It's like when you're watching a movie and they do one thing where they bring one person back from life. And you're like, all right, I can let that slide. But then all of a sudden you realize, all these different people are coming back from the dead.
Yeah.
They're rising up from the dead. So it doesn't even matter if somebody gets killed. No.
Not a Days of Our Lives fan, I see, Seth, huh?
Happened multiple times?
Daytime soap operas bring people back, and usually they have amnesia when they bring them back and they think they're somebody else. And then
when they
finally realize, 2 months into the storyline that that's right, I'm Patch Johnson, and it's a very big moment, you know?
That's why I couldn't enjoy the end of the one Marvel movie where half the characters die.
Yeah.
And, there's people in the theater crying and everything. I'm like, do you guys not understand capitalism? There's no way in hell.
They just killed a billion-dollar empire.
There's no way in hell they're not bringing back a majority. It ruined the movie for me.
Me too.
And I'm like, me too. All right, well.
Dude, and that's the only Marvel movie. I don't even remember which one it was. But that's the only Marvel movie that I've been to in like the last 15 years. And I'm like, this is why I don't go to these things.
It was, why are you guys taking this seriously?
Yeah.
None of these people, maybe one of them, I don't know what the final body count was, but there's no way in hell they're all staying dead.
Let me get back to what I can take seriously, WWE, okay? You Marvel geeks. All right. So as far as Daniel Jeremiah goes, as far as the other storylines you and I were talking about earlier, Seth, like the big storylines in the draft, he does not have the Browns trading out of two. Travis Hunter goes to the Browns. He does have the magnificent Gladstone landing Ashton Jeanty at five. Based on everything I've heard, this is Daniel Jeremiah talking, from talking to people around the league, the expectation is the Jags will draft either Jeanty or Arizona wide receiver Tet McMillan here. I'll go with the higher rated player on my board in Jeanty. The interesting thing about McMillan is that when we talk about intangibly rich, there's that video that's circulated of him saying he doesn't even really watch football.
Yeah.
That don't compute to me, T, as Paulie Walnuts would say. Like, that don't compute to me. Intangibly rich doesn't watch football. Eh.
I'm always torn on that because there are some guys who are really, really good that aren't just like they don't enjoy sitting around. Sometimes it's because they don't like sitting around for 3.5 hours on a Sunday watching the NFL. They just want it. If it's a guy that's just out either working out on his own or whatever, I'm okay with that. You got to put it all in context when you get to know the actual guy.
They've got McMillan landing with, or Daniel Jeremiah does, has him landing with the Cowboys at 12. So
the other big thing there would be is that for a long time, Mason Graham, the defensive tackle out of Michigan to the Jaguars, was a very, very popular pick. If they don't go with Mason Graham in this draft, he goes down to number 8 to the Panthers.
Carolina.
Don't worry, Texans. If the Texans trade up, I will be astounded if it's for anything other than an offensive lineman.
Yeah.
But I don't think Mason Graham's going to be in the conversation.
I'd be intrigued if Tyler Warren started slipping like to 12 or 13.
Oh, okay. You know what? You're exactly right.
That would
You're
be intriguing
right.
to me, you know?
Yeah, if one of those really top-tier guys starts sliding. And hey, you know who else was bad in pass protection last year? The tight ends.
Yeah.
So it wasn't so by virtue of, hey, having tight ends that can hopefully develop into good blockers, but also take pressure off the offensive line by being a receiving threat. Yeah, that helps out C.J. Stroud, too.
Warren's a dog, man. He is a dog. He's a difference maker. I'd be all for that. If they wanted to trade some of that Tunsil capital to go up and get Tyler Warren, do it, man.
Well, Colson Loveland would be an interesting one.
That one,
tight
too.
End out of Michigan as well. Because if he starts, that's a more realistic one that could start sliding down towards 25.
Yep. Jeremiah has the Broncos trading up from 20 to 13 with the Dolphins to draft Loveland. So there you go. All right. That's our final mock draft injection, at least at this time. Maybe we do another one between now and the end of the show since day one, night one is tonight. We'll see. Let's circle back to the Rockets. They win a big playoff game last night. How sustainable is what they did last night? And is what happened last night the basketball gods compensating us for 2018? We'll find out in the next day or so, but we'll explain coming up next.